Our last case this morning is 2020-743, Ronald M. Jurinek et al. Versus Dion et al. In place of Justice Bruner, we have Judge Robin Piper III from the 12th District Court of Appeals, who is sitting on our panel today. Welcome, Judge.
Thank you.
All right. For Mr. Dion, Mr. Ashton.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor. May it please the court. With the court's permission, I would like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. Appellants Wilhelmina Dion request this court confirm one straightforward proposition, that Ohio Appellate Rule 26A1C's language that applications for reconsideration shall be considered by the panel that issued the original decision means exactly what it says. In interpreting these types of rules, or as in statutes, the first step is always to determine whether language is plain and unambiguous. And if you would indulge me just for this instance, if none of the panel members or none of the judges of this court knew about this issue, and I handed you the decision in Jurinek 1 and asked which panel issued this decision, I would hope that all of you would unambiguously say Judge Bruner, Judge Horton, and Judge Klatt. That is the plain and unambiguous reading of Appellate Rule 26. So.
Counsel, why can't that rule mean the judge's seat as opposed to the personal, to the judge personally or any personality?
Your Honor, so I think that's going back to the issue raised in Holland v. State, whereas, okay, is it incumbent within that seat where the power lies? And I would state, first of all, that determination in Holland predated the rules. But again, I think what we're dealing with is, in essence, it's, if you go back to philosophy, it's the ship of Theseus paradox. If you have the ship and you start moving panels from it, when is it no longer the ship? And the fallacy that I think philosophers have pointed out in that is it implies identity across time. Here we have...
Well, your reading of the rule is really impossible, right? Because if you say panel means the same three judges, well, if a judge leaves, then that judge can't constitutionally rule on that motion. So it can't happen.
I think there are two aspects. One is if you're applying Article 4, Section 3A, which I think you were. In that case, if there is not a quorum, then it just fails by operation of not having a quorum.
But if there's not a quorum, to go back to the way you literally read the language, you say panel means the same three judges. Well, the same three judges cannot hear that. So that reading makes no sense.
It goes to the remainder. So in this case, it would have gone back to...
But then if panel equals those three judges, then that's no longer the panel because two is not the panel under your version.
Then under that instance, reconsideration is just not an option.
Well, but Counselor, under that logic, if, you know, a three-judge panel, A, B, and C, decide a case, and God forbid, C dies before somebody can file for reconsideration, then those parties are out of the option for filing an application for reconsideration.
No, absolutely not, Your Honor. Under our reading, even in this instance where we had two judges left, to the extent they concur to where it concurs with Section 3B, i.e. the majority judgment requirement, those two judges, if they agree, if there's a true obvious error, those two judges can still constitutionally meet that requirement because the first determination, there were three judges.
So what if you lose two of the three?
Then in that case, then there would not be the ability to have reconsideration. But
although there are constitutionally sworn in officers who make up the court, you're saying by your reading, should those individual judges be missing, then the parties no longer have a right for reconsideration.
If two judges are missing, then the right to have reconsideration, which is a procedural right, would not be present. That is correct, but that is not to say they are without a remedy.
But didn't Judge Klatt issue a judgment entry ruling on the motion for reconsideration?
He did, joined by...
So then how do we consider the Constitution where it says a majority, it takes a majority to enter a judgment?
I guess I don't understand your question. In that instance...
How do we consider the Ohio Constitution where it says for a court of appeals to issue a judgment, it shall be done by a majority of the panel?
In that case, procedurally, there would just be not an option for reconsideration.
But wouldn't there also be no option for majority to rule if only two people are considering it?
There would
if
be an option
one for one, there is no majority.
If there is one for one, no, then it fails procedurally. If they both agree, then we do meet.
But doesn't that violate the Constitution that says a judgment entry can only be entered by a majority on the panel?
There was. So I guess I'm talking about the procedural aspect, i.e. reconsideration fails under a 1-1 tie, fails by rule. You still have the original decision that was constitutionally firm, had the three judges, had two in the concurrence.
Yeah.
That is the established law. That is what stands. Again, we are not talking about substantive rights under Article 4, Section 3. The reconsideration rule was something that falls under this court's rulemaking authority under Section 5 of Article 4.
Well, but it's still a disposition in a case, which Article 4, Section 3A says has to be done by three judges, shall participate.
Your Honor, it's not a disposition. It is
just... You don't think issuing a decision on whether or not to reconsider a case is a disposition?
I don't think there has to be a disposition, Your Honor, by rule under that instance where there's a one-to-one tie. And I think I need to reaffirm that we think if there are two judges remaining, they both agree, they can constitutionally enter a judgment.
Counsel.
What if they disagree?
You're relying on what, Appellate Rule 26A1C?
26A1C, correct.
Okay. Application for reconsideration shall be considered by the panel that issued the original decision. It doesn't say the judges. It says the panel. Do you see a distinction?
I do, Your Honor, because it doesn't, if that were the case, it would just say a panel, that applications for reconsideration shall be considered by a panel. What the language, and we can't read that as being superfluous, what the language is saying is who. Who gets to reconsider it?
Well,
what gets to reconsider? And what gets to reconsider is the panel. And due to circumstances, there was Judge Horton was left the bench, and Judge Nelson took his place. He then becomes a member of the panel.
He is.
And then the dictates of 26A1C are met.
No,
it doesn't say anywhere. It doesn't say. It doesn't refer to a person.
Your Honor, but a panel, the Black's Law Dictionary definition of a panel is a set of three judges. Now, in time, that set of three judges, what we're talking about, we can't ignore the modifier. The modifier is that issued the original decision. Which judges issued the original decision?
But Counselor, can't that be construed as saying, for instance, the largest appellate court in the state is the 8th District Court of Appeals with 12 judges. And so if judges 1, 2, 3 issued a decision and judges 1, 2, and 3 are still on the court, can't that be read to say judges 4, 5, and 6 can't rule on it, or judges 7, 8, and 9, or 10, 11, and 12? If the judges who are made up the panel of 1, 2, and 3,
if they are gone, Your Honor, is that your hypothetical?
No. Let's say 1, 2, and 3 judges are still there.
Mm-hmm.
Reading that rule, judges 4, 5, and 6 cannot rule on the motion to reconsider.
That's correct, Your
correct.
Honor. It's
However, but if judges 1, 2, and 3 are replaced due to retirement or leaving the bench, and Judge X comes in and becomes Judge 2, Judge Y comes in and becomes Judge 3, that is still panel of judges 1, 2, and 3.
Your Honor, but it... I don't think so, because that's not the panel that issued the original decision, and I think we need to look at this through the lens of its reconsideration, by its namesake, reconsideration.
But how do we do anything as individuals? We do everything, we issue judicial decisions based on our constitutional authority and our statutory authority to do so. And so what difference does it make individually who makes the decision? I mean, by your analysis, then the law stops every time something personal happens to a judicial officer.
Well, no, it's under this operation.
Or it can stop.
Well, Your Honor, but it's reconsideration. Reconsideration is not a constitutional right. Reconsideration is allowing, it's the opportunity to allow judges who made a determination to revisit that determination. How can anyone possibly, other than those three judges, determine whether there was obvious error or there was an issue not considered?
That's why we have a record.
But, Your Honor, that I don't know if the record takes into account the conferences that the judges may have amongst themselves, that the oral argument, there may be different
How is that any different from appellate courts reviewing trial court decisions and this court reviewing appellate court decisions? You're putting emphasis on individuals, and that's not what the law is about.
Your Honor, I do think that is what it's about. Again, we're talking about where there's a remand. And say the judge was replaced, and I think there is case law out there saying that, okay, a new judge can take over at that point. But what we're not saying is remanding down to a trial court judge saying, reconsider what your predecessor did. It comes with instructions.
Okay, the remand is to the court, okay? If that court has a new judge on it, it's still a remand to that court.
That's correct.
All right. And this refers to a panel, which is, in essence, a court. And it's the same theory that this is sent back to the panel. And if there's been a change in the panel, there's nothing in the rules that would suggest that there was a preclusion to hear that case.
Unless you think the rule is designed to protect the sanctity of that individual judge.
Well, it is, Your Honor, but I think the language, it's not just the sanctity, the language itself. I think the problem is, in all of this discussion, we keep stopping at the panel. It's not just the panel, it's the panel that issued the original.
It seems to me that something your argument misses is you insinuate that it's a reconsideration of the opinion, and it's not. It's a reconsideration based on whether or not there's obvious error or an issue that wasn't addressed. It's not. So this new, whether it's the new judge on a panel or the original, all three exactly the same, they're not reviewing the whole decision. They're only reviewing whether or not there's an obvious error.
I don't know if that happened in this case, Your Honor, because simply the dissent became the majority became the dissent. But again, who can apply that?
But Judge Klatt made a point in his decision, I think, of pointing out what he considered, and whoever the judge who agreed with him was, that what the obvious errors were, and he articulated why they were obvious errors.
Your Honor, I think only the panel that issued the original decision can appreciate and apply the obvious errors.
So in the federal system, there doesn't seem to be a problem with replacing judges on a panel on rehearing, right?
Well, no, for those types of rehearings, they allow two judges to make the determination.
No. Generally, if you look at decisions on rehearing, there'll be a replacement judge if a judge has retired or died or resigned, at least the ones I've seen.
A lot of the research we've showed, they've allowed two judges to make that determination. That was our suggestion in this case. I think the concern, Your Honor, is where does it more...
Yes, this.
Yes.
You're talking about the rule, but Article 4, Section 3 specifically says, and I quote, in districts having additional judges, three judges shall participate in the hearing and dispose of each case. So that rule would collide. Your view of only two could hear that case on remand collides with the Constitution, and obviously this document setting the number would control.
Your Honor, it doesn't, because our position is Jezernak 1, the original decision being reconsidered, met that constitutional standard. Now we're asking, do two of the judges, consistent with Section 3B, concur that there was an obvious error. The problem is if you bring new judges on, we're not talking about reconsideration, we're talking about a second appeal. There's nothing in the appellate rules, there's nothing in the Constitution.
Why do you say it's a second appeal when the only thing they can consider is whether there was an obvious error or something, and they can't go through all the assignments of error again and reevaluate the whole case? And that question, and two, do you consider two judges on the appellate, or do you consider two judges a panel?
Would I consider two judges a panel?
Right.
Yes, in this instance.
But as Justice Kennedy just said, constitutionally that's incorrect.
But again, we're talking about the same panel. If we're talking about the same individuals, this is the same panel that issued Jezernak 1, which was constitutionally sound.
But if
the first decision.
By leaving the bench, by one judge leaving the bench for whatever reason, you can't have those three individuals again. But by your analysis, your argument, there is still a panel of two.
If they agree. So panel was met with the issuance of the original decision. With reconsideration, so we've moved on from Section 3A now to Section 3B of the Constitution. Now, do a majority of those judges, whoever remain, do they want to change their decision?
You can't have a majority if you only have two.
Two, yeah, if you have two, they can both agree.
So a unanimous panel.
Yeah, they can both agree. Otherwise, 1-1, it fails. And so, again, we're talking about a rule. This is not a constitutional right. This is reconsideration that allows one panel to reconsider their own decision rather than having outsiders reconsider.
Outsiders.
Well, outsiders from the I guess what I mean in that instance
other
is
members,
outsiders.
Other
from,
members of the court?
Well, no. Outsiders from the decision writing, the ones that rendered or decided
but
the
aren't
first
those
appeal.
Outsiders it's, other members of the court?
I do, yes. Okay. Bad vernacular, Your Honor, but yes. Other members of the court who did not issue the original decision.
Okay. Does it says the panel that decided, right?
The panel that issued.
That issued. It doesn't say the same panel.
It doesn't need to, Your Honor. The panel that issued the original decision.
Panel is an institution made up by three judges, just like this court is an institution made up by seven judges. And we have a Court of Appeals judge sitting at the end, Judge Piper. The institutions can be and are populated by judges, but that doesn't mean the judges individually make up the institution.
Your Honor, at a certain point, when a case is argued and heard, there are judges whose names are going to appear on that decision, so the panel has been identified. In this instance, the rule was talking about the panel that was identified. It was the panel that issued the original decision.
And counsel, when that case is referred to as a 10th District Court of Appeals decision, they don't refer to it as the panel of the 10th District Court of Appeals decision. It's the perspective here is the institution, the judicial institutions. Now your time is up.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Yurnell.
Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. My name is Elisa Yarnell. I'm here with my co-counsel, Mark Kessler.
And could you pull the microphone a little closer to you? Thank you.
Certainly. I represent the Jezernak appellees in this case. I think Justice Stewart best encapsulated our argument when she said that judges don't do anything as individuals. Judges act in their official capacity in the judicial seat where they sit when they are making the decision.
How do you address the argument, though, that by allowing a new member to come in, you're allowing for a second bite of the apple?
Your Honor, I think it's clear that
isn't that kind of what happened here, that the decision went one way, then it went another way, then it went a third way, second bite of the apple?
I think that optically that is something that could be seen here, but in actuality, that's not what happens on reconsideration. The question is whether there are obvious errors, and in this situation in Jezernak 1, there were, and there's really no debate here or even in the decisions below as to whether there were
obvious
errors.
Didn't the obvious errors here really go to the merits of some of the issues that pivoted how the case concluded?
It certainly changed the outcome of the case. I mean, the first primacy was the standard of review, and that was one of the obvious errors that Judge Klatt mentioned in Jezernak 2, and that was something that was not really addressed by Jezernak 1 and was not really addressed by the appeal up to that point, and that's exactly what the obvious error standard is for. And it's interesting, the appellants somewhat assume that Judge Horton would have reached the same conclusion on the motion for reconsideration as he did when he joined the Jezernak 1 opinion, and that's simply something that can't be assumed. And the fact of the matter is, whatever he might have decided had he remained on the bench, he was not on the bench, and Judge Nelson was. Judge Nelson had the full constitutional authority to participate in that decision, and the 10th District properly assigned him to the panel to replace Judge Horton, and it remained the same panel according to the rule. Appellate Rule 26A1C, as has already been discussed, says the panel that issued the original decision. This is not the only instance in the appellate rules that talks about the panel. Appellate Rule 21 also refers to the panel that hears an oral argument. And in Appellate Rule 21, it specifically provides for what happens when the membership of the panel changes in between the time those three judges are first announced to the litigants and when oral argument takes place. And the rule specifically describes the new membership of the panel. It would be impossible for a panel to have new membership if the panel does not exist independent of the specific individual judges who compose that panel at any particular time. And that really makes clear that when the rules talk about the panel, they're not talking about specific judges. When the rule says panel, it doesn't say judges, and it doesn't say judges for a reason.
But, Counselor, as your opponent says, it does say panel that decided the case.
It does, Your Honor, and it is the panel that issued the original decision, and the specific identity of the judges doesn't make it less the panel. It is the panel that was assigned the appeal in Jezernak versus Dean, and it
so
remained the same panel.
So you're clearly saying there's a difference between the panel that decided the case and what if it said the judges that decided the case, would it be different?
I think that would be different, Your Honor. If the rule said that the motion for reconsideration shall be decided by the judges that issued the original decision.
So why is it a different when they're in their individual capacities as judicial officers or in their collective capacity as judicial officers?
Well, a judge as an individual judge is a specific person, and Justice Stewart is not the same as Justice Fisher, and
thank God, because he's older.
And I concur. And in the same way, Judge Piper is not Justice Bruner.
But it doesn't say it should be decided by Justice alias Smith and Jones. It says if you're saying it's the judges that decided the opinion decided the case or the panel decided the case, but those are distinctly different, right? And as we were saying to your opponent, we aren't individuals. We act in a capacity as an institution, as the chief is saying. So why is there a difference between judges that decided the case and panel that decided the case?
Well, Your Honor, I think the difference comes in that it doesn't say judges. It does say panel, and the rules don't talk about judges and what a judge...
Then why wouldn't it be kind of like an en banc situation? Why wouldn't it be, if you have six judges on an en banc, and three decide one way, three decide the other way, so there's no clear decision, the original decision takes effect? Why wouldn't it be a panel, the same panel that heard the case minus one? And if it's one-to-one, the original decision would stand.
Well, Your Honor, there are a couple of related answers to that question. The first is that the rule doesn't provide for that. And when this court approved the rule changes in 2010 that added the en banc consideration procedure to the appellate rules and also added the language that we're talking about here, the rule specifically provided for that kind of split decision in the en banc situation and did not provide for it in reconsideration and instead just said the panel, which is a group of three judges, and nobody's disputing that a panel is three judges.
So although, you're recommending that the rule be modified to be more articulate?
Certainly not. I'm not recommending that. I mean, if there is perceived to be a problem with the policy implications of allowing a panel member to be replaced in between an original decision and oral argument, I would submit that's the appropriate way to go about it. In this case, the rule says what it says, and it was properly applied in what it says, and it should be applied as it was written. The second part of your question, Judge Piper, really goes to the Ohio constitutional requirements that are at issue in this case, and there are two of them. The one is the requirement of three judges participating in the hearing and disposition of each case, and the appellant's rule would violate that requirement in situations as here, where there are no longer three judges to make up a quorum of the court in deciding the motion for reconsideration. As Justice DeWine mentioned, a reconsideration is a disposition just as any other disposition, whether a motion to dismiss or a judgment in a case. The requirement that a majority of judges hearing the case concur in the judgment specifically refers to judgment, not to a disposition. And so when the rules in the en banc context provide for a procedural default, so to speak, of the motion, that does not result in a judgment. It does not result in a new judgment or a different judgment. And so the majority judgment rule is not implicated in that context. But obviously, the en banc court has more than three judges. And as this court recognized in the McFadden case, the requirement of three judges is at least three judges. And so if four judges or six judges or 12 are hearing a motion for en banc consideration and they split evenly, there are still more than three judges that have heard and disposed of the case and have disposed of that motion. Briefly, I also want to address the Huber decision out of the 8th District and how it does not provide the sort of example of what appellants want to see in among the appellate courts. Based on our research, there's no example of judicial authority being exercised by judges in an individual capacity where it cannot be later reconsidered or reviewed by another judge. And specifically in the Huber case, there was no third judge assigned or replacing the departed judge on the bench. And that was appears to be the reason why the decision was granted, the motion was granted without a third judge on the panel. But the 8th District does not follow that practice as a matter of course since the Huber decision. And we cited the Fireman's Fund case in which a motion for reconsideration was unanimously granted by a panel that had two new panel members on it since the prior decision. So
some of those cases that you cited, weren't they cases where there really was no objection to a new judge comprising of the panel?
It appears that there was no objection to that in that particular case, and which makes sense if the panel is unanimous against you. There's not a whole lot of hope that if it were to go back that you would be successful. But I think more broadly, it just goes to show how judges in the state of Ohio, from this court all the way down to the trial court level, if a trial judge is replaced in the course of a case, any interlocutory decision can be reconsidered. And there's no limit in the Ohio Constitution or in the rules in the appointment procedure for judges that restricts what types of decisions or what type of authority a judge could have.
What would you say the prejudice is if this panel was to decide that in fact, the new member should not have participated. What is the prejudice to your client?
I think the primary prejudice is the inability to determine whether or not there were obvious errors in the original decision. And the procedure for reconsideration is in the appellate rules for a reason, and it provides a very easy way for the courts of appeals to correct those errors without requiring an appeal to this court to correct something that's actually really simple and perhaps was just overlooked and could be corrected in a shorter time frame. And there's no difference in the basis for reconsideration in the normal course where the panel members stay the same and the situation where there might still be obvious errors and a panel member has left the bench and has been replaced. And for that reason, the procedure should apply the same. If there are no further questions, I'll briefly conclude my argument, which really rests on the principle in Ohio law. In the Holland decision, this court recognized 50 years ago that judges exercise authority in their official capacity and not as individuals. There is nothing in the appellate rules, practice of Ohio courts, or in the Ohio Constitution that prevented Judge Nelson from exercising the full authority that he was given when Governor DeWine appointed him to the bench and he filled Judge Horton's seat. For these reasons and for those cited in our brief, we respectfully request that the court affirm Judge Klatt's well-founded opinion recognizing that authority. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Counselor, you've used your time. You may have 30 seconds.
Thank you, Justice Stewart. I wanted to address the very question you had, rather, their answer changes, rather. Appellate Rule 26 has judges instead of panel. And they did say, yes, that does change the answer. Well, Your Honor, Black's Law Dictionary defines panel as a group of three judges. So they've admitted that our interpretation of the rule is correct. Going next to, rather, does the Constitution apply to post-judgment, post-first decision determinations? It does not. Look at the en banc rules. If we apply Article 4, Section 3B, Rule 26A2D is unconstitutional because that doesn't require a majority judgment. So that tells me that these parts of the Constitution don't apply to post-judgment because they've already been met in the original instance.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshal, will you adjourn court, please?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.